Welcome to Fire and Security Chat, brought to you by Corson Fire and Security, where we talk about the technology and equipment used to protect and secure life and property. I'm your host, Aaron Whitaker, and today I am with Chris White, Clean Agent Corporate Trainer at Corson Fire and Security. On today's episode, I will talk with Chris about Clean Agent Suppression System inspections and testing. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Aaron. How are you, man?
Good. All right. Before we jump into this about inspections and testing of clean agent systems, I wanted to ask a little bit about your background. How long have you been with Corson?
So I will be starting my 23rd year April of this year at Corson Fire Security. I started back in 96, started out as actually at the main branch, Indianapolis, as a fire alarm tech. And so it's been so many years, I kind of forget all the exact time frame, but I started doing fire alarm, and then 3 or 4, maybe 6 months in, something like that. They needed some help on a lot of sprinkler repairs. So they asked me to go over and start doing some of that. So I did that for about 4 months, somewhere around there. And then went back to fire alarm, where that's what I did. It was really, I did a little bit of service, but my main functionality was doing, you know, the large inspections, the ones that would take 2 weeks to do, you know, like an example, Conseco Fieldhouse. You know, I was always seemed to be the one doing those large inspections. And then there was an opportunity about 4 or 5 years into my career to start doing clean agent and CO2 inspections for the Indianapolis branch. I probably was doing that for about 6 months and went to my first training class. And, you know, you think you're doing well, and then you go to your first training class and you realize, holy crap, I wasn't even scratching the surface. It was an eye-opener. Yeah. And, you know, I decided at that point in time that, you know, this was going to be my career. I needed to take it very serious, and I needed to, I guess, really start educating myself. So as I started doing the inspections at Indianapolis, where I did my own scheduling, my own service, my own parts ordering, my own meeting with customers and all that type of thing, I did that for about 5 years. And then there was an opportunity for me to come over to the training center. So I was at the training center for about 2 years, 2.5 years, and there had been some changes with personnel, that type of thing. I was asked to go over to corporate engineering, and so I was part of a travel team, but out of corporate engineering, where we would go and provide support on the installation side with our branches.
Clean agent?
Yeah, with clean agent and CO2 systems. And also do quality control, ensure that they were installed properly, those type of things. And so I did that, I don't know, probably about 2.5 years. Still kind of doing my training role as far as teaching classes and stuff, but I really wasn't attached to the training center. Like I said, I was part of the corporate engineering department. And then about 5 years ago, Mr. Corson said, hey, we need you back over at the training center. So I'm officially back to the training center. Last 5 years, where all I do is strictly training, primarily on the inspection, maintenance, and testing side. But that's kind of very boring, I guess, synopsis of my career at Corson Fire and Security. Like I said, it's been 23 years, and you know, I've seen a lot of different things. But at the same token, I'm very open minded in knowing that you can never know everything in this industry. So, and that's the beauty to me of being a corporate trainer, is I have the opportunity to always get myself educated, good or bad, and, you know, hopefully be able to pass that information on to our very, very important customers, AHJs, insurance, and to our sales staff and our technicians.
Okay. Do you still get out in the field?
Yeah, I still get out in the field. Right now, that's one of my roles, is not only doing, you know, classroom training, which, you know, here at the training center, we do classroom training, and then we take what we talk about in the classroom, and each of our disciplines actually have a hands-on area. So then the technicians and sales staff, for that matter, if and any other training that we do for any customers or AHJs, you know, we can take them back to the respective discipline hands-on area and let them touchy feel, let them pull the pull stations, or, you know, in my case with the clean agent and CO2, you know, we'll discharge an Energen system, of course, which is an inert gas. It's very loud. You really don't see anything, but that's the way those systems, because of the gas, is. But the one that's really cool is the CO2, right? Because you get that white fogging. But we have all of our life safety devices that could be required on the CO2, and it's a great avenue to be able to have people physically see what those devices and how those devices function and what we're talking about and that type of thing. And especially on the technician standpoint, what a great opportunity for them to touch and feel and make mistakes. And that's okay to make mistakes. We use it and teach it as a learning opportunity. And, you know, so they hopefully wouldn't make that same mistake out, you know, at a customer in the real world. Yeah. But we're all human. It happens, right? But that's the beauty of the training center. But so once we get done with the hands-on, the classroom training, I generally try to, and it doesn't always work out depending on what's going on, but I generally try to then get out to the branches out in the field with the techs that have recently, within a couple, 3 months of the class, to not only meet with them again, but at the same token to start kind of actually in an uncontrolled environment, if you will, out in the real world, in a real type system where, you know, you can't make mistakes, but, you know, with the techs to start building off of what they have learned in the classroom and continuing that education above and beyond, outside the classroom, if you will, because, you know, it's most like anything else, it's repetition. The more you do it, the more comfortable you become with it, the better you understand it, the better, the more efficient you become with it. So that's what we're trying to build off of the classroom, is then get with them in the field and go through and discuss things and that type of thing.
One last question before we kind of jump into what we're supposed to talk about.
Yeah.
Is the training center, how long has it been around? Has it been around since you've been here?
No. Let's see. How long has the training center been here?
Have they always trained in the techs in a training environment, I guess?
Yeah, when the training center first started, it was maybe 12 years ago, maybe 13, somewhere around there. What we have now is not the way it was originally set. I mean, we had hands-on. And our training then was strictly, I mean, it was primarily technician-driven, to the point where our fire alarm, sprinkler, clean agent, CO2 classes, they were a very intense week long. We dumped a lot of information on them in a very short period of time. And then I don't remember exactly the time frame, but maybe 5-6 years ago, somewhere around there, we realized we needed to kind of readjust our training methods. So we've backed those classes down to 3 or 4 days, depending on what the discipline is. And we're starting to now build off of those 3 or 4 day classes. It's the basics. It's the fundamentals. And then we are, on some disciplines, starting to have advanced classes. So you have to go through the fundamentals. You got to prove you understand the basic fundamentals. Now you can come back and come to a more advanced class where we dig a little bit into that discipline a little bit deeper. One of the other things that we've really started pushing and doing is sales training for our sales staff. It's not as intense as, if you will, as the technician, but we're trying to give the tools to our sales staff to have an understanding when they walk in and they're talking to the, you know, to our prospective customers or AHJs or whoever it is. They can have, you know, that smart, intelligent, and really be able to have that conversation as to why we do what we do and what we're about. Because, you know, it's extremely important. It's one thing that we understand how we do things, what we do, but it's the why. And so that's what we're trying to convey, is to the real reason, which is the why. And, you know, and like I said, we've done AHJs. Usually the AHJs are in the respective branches territory. But again, it's It's really, really fun doing those from a training aspect because during a break or whatever, or even question and answers, they will be asking questions because it's just not fire marshals and building inspectors. There could be customer facility managers or safety managers in those trainings as well. But what's really nice about it is in those conversations, they can be asking questions or whatever, you know, having that conversation. And from our perspective, in that conversation, if we're able to get something and say, hey, you know, in our next training class, hey, guys, they're really, you know, certain areas really starting to look at this. Here's why we really need to start, you know, it educates us too. Because, again, we don't know.
You get that feedback.
Yeah, we get that feedback, which is absolutely crucial for us to continue to grow as corporate trainers, but to pass on that information and try to educate whoever it is we're in front of. But yeah, it's like I said, to me, the learning aspect and being able to grow has just been, I mean, that's kind of the coolest, one of the coolest parts of the job.
Yeah. If you've never been to the Corson Training Center located in Indianapolis, it's quite impressive. And there's also a even equally impressive museum here. Lots of antique fire stuff, fire engines, fire trucks, thousands of fire extinguishers, brass extinguishers. So if you ever have a chance, stop by here and check it out. It's pretty cool place.
Yeah, that it is. And you know, if you kind of wanted, I guess, get a video of it before you came or whatever. And it seems like it's always changing. Matter of fact, we had some meetings going on yesterday, and next thing you know, Mr. Corson was in the building and he was back there, you know, doing his thing in his museum. So you never know when something's going to change, but it's pretty darn cool. You know, there's no cost to come in and see it. We'd appreciate kind of a heads up before somebody just randomly showed up. But if you give us, you know, call and see if you can come in, generally we're going to say yes, unless we have a bunch of different trainings going on. You know, we'll be more than happy to let you back there and check everything out. But yeah, it is definitely a one of a kind. It is definitely pretty cool for sure.
All right. We've spent almost 14 minutes talking, and we haven't jumped into the subject matter at hand, but let's do this now.
All right, let's do it.
Inspections and testing of clean agent suppression systems. All right, we've talked in the past about installing and room integrity and stuff like that. Once I have my clean agent suppression system installed in, let's say, my server room or whatever,
right,
what do I, as the business owner, need to be, what am I responsible for as far as inspections, maintenance, testing?
That's just it. It's your responsibility. It's your system.
Yep.
So it's kind of your responsibility as the business owner. Again, it's your system to make sure that you've got a good, reputable service vendor providing the proper maintenance and testing on whatever system, clean agent system that you have, since you use the example of a server room. You know, like the last time we talked about enclosure integrity. Enclosure integrity is it's your room. It's your responsibility. So, you know, once you get that service contract signed, the responsibility a little bit falls on the service company to ensure that they're maintaining the proper sequence as far as the testing goes. But again, at the end of the day, it's your responsibility to make sure that's getting done and that you're maintaining all the paperwork for anybody that, you know, with the authority to come in and want to have to look at it, that they can look at it and make sure you're getting your system properly maintained.
As far as the guidelines, regulations, things like that, who is it? Fire marshals, the AHJ? What rules? Is it the service vendor that would tell me this? What rules I need to follow?
So it's really local jurisdictions and what they have adopted into their building code. So when we're talking about clean agents, like your Energens, your Argonites, your Nitrogens, your FM200, your Novak 1230 systems, every single one of those systems, the one standard that is consistent, just like fire alarm, is NFPA 72. Okay. NFPA 72 kind of is the guideline. Of course, it's a standard until it's been adopted into the local codes. Then it's enforceable, right? But 72 is the one that gives us the baseline for our detection and control. Our spot type smoke detection, spacing, parameters, mm-hmm. you know, height of your horn strobes, ADA, all that stuff falls under 72.
Okay.
Well, then we have to expand upon, now you have a clean agent system. So for your example, the server room, let's say it was FM200. Well, your Energen, your Argonite, Nitrogen, FM200, Novak 1230, they all then fall under the standard NFPA 2001, which is a standard on clean agent fire extinguishing systems. So you have 72 giving you guidelines as far as detection and control.
Mm-hmm.
2001 then adds to that, this is what you have to do in reference to whatever clean agent system that you have that falls under that NFPA standard.
And those tend to kind of set the baseline, the general rules for most jurisdictions.
Yes.
Or all jurisdictions.
Yeah. And so, you know, the jurisdictions themselves can decide, you know, which edition. So about every 3 years, each NFPA standard, you know, a new edition comes out. So one of the biggest challenges that we have is, because we're in so many different jurisdictions, is trying to teach to what you know, to what we need to, I guess, to the worst case edition, because you may have, for an example, NFPA 2001, 2004 edition. There's a lot of the base and the core of that NFPA standard. If you go to NFPA 2001, 2015 edition, they're all the same. But just like anything else, as we hopefully get smarter as an industry, you know, you've got your NFPA committees. They're constantly looking at these things and discussing and all that. So you'll start seeing changes in the newer editions. So it doesn't mean that, okay, there's a new, for an example, NFPA 2001 edition. My system was installed 5 years ago. Doesn't mean now you have to now meet all the newer standard. You've already got this. It was hopefully installed under the proper guidelines, you know, 5 years ago. But they're always evolving in changes, you know, again, trying to always be smarter and those type of things. You know, then for CO2, you know, it's NFPA 12. If you have a whole old Halon 1301 system, you really need to think about getting rid of it, but it'll be NFPA 12A. But there's standards that everything kind of gives you the guidelines on.
Okay. How often does the system need to be, I guess, what is inspected, what is tested, what's the...
So if you go by the true definitions, like inspect, test, maintenance, those type of things, mm-hmm. inspect means visually, with your eyeballs. If you have, and it will be right in the manufacturer, the other kind of guideline, I guess I forgot to mention, was you'll have manufacturer guidelines, so specific to that manufacturer's product, that you also have to follow.
Okay.
But back to the visual is, you know, inspect. You're looking at it with your eyeballs. You're not touching anything. You're just looking. And you as the business owner, you the owner of the system, you really need to look at least once a week and just walk up to your agent container,
mm-hmm.
look at it, make sure the pressure's good, you know. Just visually, does it look good? Don't have to touch it. You don't have to do anything. You just really need to look at it. Go look at your release and control panel.
Mm-hmm.
Is it got the green light? Is it good? Is everything, you know, make sure things, boxes or and stuff isn't in the way, getting stacked in front of things. That's what the visual is for. And then your testing and maintenance is going to be semi-annually and annually. So that's where...
Well, let's jump back to the weekly, the monthly
yeah.
visual inspection.
Mm-hmm.
Is it required to have it written, documented, that you've done these?
Not really. Is it a good idea? Yeah, it's absolutely a good idea, because then you have some kind of documentation that somebody's been doing it.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, doing a visual is extremely easy. It's your system. You know, and it doesn't take but a couple of minutes just to walk up, look at everything, have some kind of documentation for your own benefit, because it also will probably help you, maybe, you know, I'm not an insurance agent, but, you know, I can't see where it would not be a detriment to you doing that, especially showing, you know, if you need for your, you know, insurance purposes or whatever, that you're trying to do everything you can to properly maintain your system, and you're trying to do everything that you can to ensure that it's going to function as intended if you would ever, you know, if you ever need it. Mm. So,
okay. So getting back to the inspection part, you said semi-annual or?
Yeah. So you have a semi-annual and an annual. The semi is, since we're talking strictly really kind of clean agents right now, if it is a halocarbon like your FM200, Novak 1230, those agent containers, the weight and pressure have to be checked every 6 months. So the way we check that, we're checking for weight and we're also checking the pressure. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of different ways to do that. One is you disconnect the discharge hose or hard piping to the agent container, get your safety devices in place to ensure that you're safe. You unhook the cylinder with the bracketing off the wall, and you put it on a scale. You get your readings, and then you hook everything back up. The other is called a liquid level indicator. So it's basically, for simplest form, it's basically a tape with a magnet on the end of it inside the agent container. So as you pull that tape up, there's going to be a float that's kind of floating, if you will, on top of the compressed liquid inside the cylinder. And so as that magnet comes up, it grabs a hold of that float because it has a magnet in it as well. And so if you get your reading off of your tape, and then per the manufacturer, you look at your manufacturer's manual, you go to that chart for that size cylinder and say, okay, at this reading, it should be this much, many pounds of agent. We're going to look at the placard and verify everything is matching up. As long as it's matching up, we never have to move the cylinder.
Okay. Does all of them have the...
No.
No? Okay.
No. Should they? Yeah, they should. But the reality of it is, if your service company is wanting to use a liquid level indicator, that's fine. That's fantastic. But if they don't have the manufacturer reference material, so I'm going to be a little bit, I guess, so you pull the tape up inside, and let's, for the example, say the tape for this agent container, this manufacturer's, reads at 10 inches. If you don't have anything to reference, like the manufacturer's manual, to tell you what that 10 inches really means, what are you doing? It's really not telling you anything. What it boils down to is you're, unfortunately, in my opinion, you're being a little lazy because you didn't want to pull it off. So even if
it's like reading a dipstick without a dipstick.
That's exactly right. Because, okay, yay, it measured at 10 inches. Okay. Whoop-de-frickin'-do. So if that's the case, then even though the liquid level indicator is there, well, if they don't have the reference material, they really ought to be pulling that cylinder off the wall and putting it on a scale. Because again, like the reference you used, the dipstick, I mean, you don't know what it's actually telling you. For inerts, it's still every 6 months, but because of the gases, it's gases that are already in the atmosphere, they've been compressed and mixed and those type of things, depending on which agent manufacturer it is inside the cylinder, that's all pressure. So, but we also have to pay attention to pressure based on temperature. Everything is based on 70 degrees. So, for an example, your halocarbons, we're looking at 360 PSI at 70 degrees. So, one of the things that we need to verify is what is the temperature of the agent container. Because if it's cooler, and let's say it's 60 degrees in that room, the pressure gauge is going to move to the left a little bit. It may not be dead center of the green, and it doesn't mean the cylinder's leaking, doesn't necessarily mean the cylinder's low. It's just being compensated, you know, for the temperature inside that it's exposed to. In the other way, if it's going off to the right a little bit, maybe the room's 80 degrees, which is obviously a very, very bad thing when it comes to servers, because servers don't like the heat. But back to the inerts real quick, we don't care about weight at all. It's all based off of pressure, because that isn't measured with inerts. We're not measuring cubic or we're not measuring with pounds, mm-hmm. we're measuring with cubic feet because it's already a gas. So again, with inerts, all we care about is the pressure.
And what are the inerts?
So your inerts would be like Energen, which is an Ansel product. Mm-hmm. So it's going to have nitrogen, argon, a little bit of CO2 in it. And then you have argonite and nitrogen. Mm-hmm. So your argonite's got argonite and nitrogen in it. And you have different manufacturers that have some form of that mixture, and they may call it something else. But it's at the end of the day, when you look at the NFPA standard, in their mind, it's all one and the same. It doesn't really matter what the brand name is on that agent cylinder. If you have argonite, 50% nitrogen, 50% argon, then, you know, it's IG 55 listed as, you know, in the NFPA standard. They don't really care that it says this manufacturer compared to another manufacturer.
So the inerts are, you go off the pressure?
Right.
Inerts. And yes. What are the ones that you weigh or you use the liquid level?
That would be the halocarbons, which okay. would be your Novak 1230, your FM200s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously you're basing the weight off of the initial weight that was taken.
Yeah, so
when it's full.
Yeah, so your halocarbon agents are going to have a placard on them somewhere on the cylinder.
Okay.
And it, based on manufacturers, some of them actually have their placard up on top of the valve. You know, they'll have them in different locations on the cylinder. But so if, for the example, we're wanting to take this FM200 tank and we need to weigh it, we're going to find the placard. We're looking at the date of the cylinder. We're looking at the serial number, model number. And then we're also going to look at what it really needs to weigh at, what the tear weight or empty weight is, and then how many pounds of agent. So basically, easy math, if you have a 100-pound cylinder and you say in the cylinder says tear weight or empty 52 pounds, and you have 48 pounds of agent, there's your 100 pounds,
yeah.
give or take, right? So then once we know what that is and we document that on the paperwork, then we take that agent container, put it on the scale. What does the scale say? And one of the other key things that a lot of people don't necessarily think about is depending on how many times you're using your scale, it really at least should be calibrated at least once a year. You really need to take it to some company or whatever that does the recalibration, the measurements, and those type of things mm-hmm. to ensure that you're within your 5% tolerance and making sure, because, you know, if your agent container says it weighs 100 and you all of a sudden you put it on the scale and you didn't realize your scale was really messed up mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're saying it weighed 120 pounds, you know, that's not good. Or the other way, there you may think there's an issue or not, or even worse, it may say everything is okay and it's actually empty or whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. But yeah, with the halocarbons, those are the ones you got to put on the scale.
Okay. And this is semi-annual, annually?
It's going to be done every 6 months and then 6 months later. So every 6 months, the aging containers need to be, the weight and or pressure need to be checked.
What else besides the weight and pressure, what else needs to be tested or inspected?
So when the batteries need to be done, charging voltage need to be done, the enclosure integrity, even though NFPA 2001 states that visually the enclosure integrity shall be quote unquote checked once a year, mm-hmm. we recommend that you do that, you know, more often. It's your room. We talked about that in the last podcast, how important enclosure integrity is when it comes to the clean agent systems. But you really need to be constantly visual and diligent in trying to ensure that your enclosure integrity is as tight as, you know, the first time that you had the enclosure integrity test done. If you've never had one done, it's a really good idea to probably have it done so you understand where your room's at and what you may or may not need to do. But that needs to be a constant.
When you're looking at the enclosure integrity, we're not talking about doing another test.
No. This is all visual.
Okay. Looking for holes that we might have run some lines through and we didn't patch them up.
Yep. Or ceiling tiles out of place. Yep. Do they get damaged for some reason?
Okay.
Is somebody keep propping a door open? Do you have proper door sweeps and seals around the door, you know, around your windows and all those all those little things, you know, as part of the enclosure integrity. So that needs to be done quite often just to make sure that you're keeping it maintained. We like to test everything every 6 months. We're going to be there anyway. You got to weigh the agent container and check the batteries. We got to disarm the system to begin with. Mm-hmm. So we just go above and beyond, and we test everything every 6 months. That is testing your smokes, your horns, your bells, you know, your pull stations, abort switches, your maintenance switches, all those functionalities of that system. We do it every 6 months. We're already there, you know, and then on the annual, not only are we testing everything, but we also then want to, and it's just a visual, but we're wanting to take a quick look at the discharge piping and the fittings. Is the discharge piping and fittings, number one, correct for the system, but is it mechanically supported? Orientation of your nozzles, everything that, you know, with the nozzles, we got to make sure things are not going to what they call impinge. In other words, affect the spray pattern, if you will, for lack of a better term, of your agent discharging out of the nozzle. Mm-hmm. And we just need to make sure all that is verified. The one thing, and we'll kind of get a little bit deeper into it, but as we're looking at the discharge piping and fittings of the system, one of the things at least once a year that we need to verify, and I hate to say this and I hate to be so negative, but I've been doing this for so long. On average, it is unbelievable, 95% of the time that customers do not have these two items, and they're called as-built drawings and flow calculations. Those two items, they're paper documents, or it could be electronic documents. Mm-hmm. Those two documents are going to tell us, number one, so when we're looking at the discharge piping and the size, mm-hmm. If you don't have those as-built and flow calcs, you can have a system that is just immaculate, great, but it's still, we still don't know if it's been installed properly or not.
Or been modified.
Exactly. Even into your enclosure integrity, your size of your room. You know, did you make it smaller, bigger, those type of things. We don't have any idea if it's good or bad without those two items, as-built drawings and flow calculations. So not only do we need to take a quick visual at the piping and fittings and those type of things, and, you know, smoke detector spacing, all those things, just a quick visualization at least once a year, but we really need to verify that off the as-built drawings and flow calculations. If the customer doesn't have them, then we as an organization are going to document it on the paperwork that you're going to receive after we've done the service on the system, because it's great that your smoke detectors smoke and your bells ring a dingy and your horn strobe and all that other stuff. But if you don't have, you know, the right piping or the right size, without those two items, we just don't really have any idea if it's been installed properly or not. We really don't. And unfortunately, me doing this many years, I've caught a lot of systems where everything works fantastic as far as your smokes and bells and all that, but it would have never, ever, once we were able to obtain the drawings and flow calcs, sorry, cuz this ain't going to flow right. It's not going to discharge right to be able to adequately suppress whatever the incipient is inside your room. And, you know, customer was no word to the wiser because whoever installed it, you know, didn't have a good moral compass. So it's unfortunate, but it happens.
Just to put this out there, we didn't install those.
No, we didn't install them.
Our flow calcs and everything would be, you know, that's, if we built it from the beginning, then we make sure that everything's...
Yeah. We try. Sometimes we mess up, and for whatever reason, and the same thing with other vendors. They had all intentions of getting that information to the customer, and something happened where they didn't. But what we try to do is, if it's a system that we have picked up to do service on that we did not install, mm-hmm. generally what we try to do is, a customer, contact the installation company, because you really should be able to get those items for free.
Yep.
If the installation customer or installation company doesn't want to, don't have, you know, whatever, you just can't get them from us, depending on who the system and the manufacturer is, then you know, we can do it for you in most cases. However, there's now going to be a charge because we didn't install the system. Mm-hmm. If it's a system that Corson has installed and for some reason we dropped the ball and didn't get that information to them, obviously there's no, we're going to do everything in our power to get that information to them as quick as we possibly can.
Okay. The containers themselves, mm-hmm. I know with fire extinguishers, they need to be hydro tested mm-hmm. every 6 years or 12 years, depending on the extinguishers. The clean agent cylinders, do they need to be hydro tested or is there any?
They do, but they don't.
Okay.
Because the clean agents are non-corrosive, then depending on the DOT stamping, depending on how often it needs to be hydrostatically tested. But there's also another thing called a 5-year external visual inspection. The cool thing about the 5-year external visual inspection is you never have to have the cylinders removed to be serviced. You can have it done right there in the customer, you know, right there at your site. Mm-hmm. Because if for an example, FM200, it's like 12 years. So, okay, my cylinder is stamped 2000, we're in 2019, oh my gosh, we haven't had it hydro, we want to get it hydro. Well, the process is now your system's going to be, quote-unquote, taken down, right? So the system, and one of the things we haven't talked about, so I guess I'll talk about it here real quick, is your detection and control and all that, if your premises has a building fire alarm, that fire extinguishing system shall be monitored for alarm trouble and supervisory. So you still have protection, if you will, or in the event, if you had some kind of fire event or incipient event that caused the clean agent system, smoke detection or something to activate, it's still going to activate the building. And then fire department for monitoring is going to be dispatched. Mm-hmm. But you don't have any gas protection. So now the cylinder's due for hydro. You got the cylinder removed out of your building. It's got to be transported to the service location. Now the service location is going to take that cylinder and they're going to pump out the agent and the nitrogen. As it's getting pumped out, we're doing everything we can to separate the agent from the nitrogen. So then once that happens, then they're going to take the valve off. They're going to fill it up with water. They're going to pressurize it. It's considered a low pressure. Mm-hmm. Boom, get the readings. We're going to dump the water out. Now you got to dry the cylinder. Now you got to put new rebuild kits in the valve, put the valve back on, refill it. Well, depending on the size of the cylinder, how many pounds you have, you know, those type of things, that may be a 2 or 3 day ordeal. Mm-hmm. It's pretty pricey. And the whole time, you know, your system's quote unquote down.
Yep.
It's getting, and the reason I bring that up is we've had some jurisdictions to where you now need to go on fire watch. You can't do the fire watch by yourself. You are going to pay the local fire department, firefighters, mm-hmm. to be on site 24/7 doing their fire watch until the system impairment, or if you will, has been completed. It gets to be a pretty expensive adventure. So, yes, you can have them hydrostatically tested. But with your FM200, your Novak, and your inerts, you can do what they call a 5-year external visual inspection. The cylinders do not have to leave your site. At any point in time, you're doing the 5-year. There's things that we have to look at. We have to look at, is there any bulging of the cylinder, mm-hmm. neck defects, you know, your foot rings, head rings, those type of things. Make sure the welds are good. Make sure there's no denting, gouging. All those things, as long as everything is good to go, we can do the 5-year, and you can do the 5-year every 5 years.
Okay.
Once the cylinder gets, if the cylinder were to get discharged, mm-hmm. then that's when a hydro would be done, because now the cylinder per DOT to be in transit's got to be stamped and all those type of things. Then your 5-year would just start over again. But as long as during the 5-year, as long as everything's good, you never have to remove that cylinder to have it hydrostatically tested. But during the 5-year, if you happen to see something as of a concern, we can always fall back to the hydrostatic test.
Okay.
Because that'll be the true test to tell us if everything's good or bad.
Now, you said if the system is discharged, then it would be hydro tested. What about going back to the inspecting the pressure and stuff? What if we find the system is low in pressure or has leaked out?
The cylinder then will have to be serviced. Okay. So in that case, then at some point, you know, you're going to get a proposal, or you should be getting a proposal so you know how much it's going to be. So that gets really, really, can get really confusing, if you will, of really what the cost is going to be. Because if you have an FM200 tank that's leaking or showing low on pressure, and it's legitimately low on pressure, sometimes it's just the nitrogen pressure. It didn't lose any agent, depending on how bad the leak is. But sometimes we have found that, yeah, it was starting to lose agent as well. But we don't know exactly what's going on until we get it back to get it serviced. So a lot of times that type of service is going to be like a time and material not to exceed. Going worst case, you know, but we don't know what we're going to get into until we start tearing into it. So in that case, the cylinder is going to be removed. You don't have any choice. The cylinder is going to have to be removed.
Okay.
And be in transit. It can be at a hydrostatic test date as long as it's going to the service company to be serviced. But then if it's past its hydrostatic test date, it's been serviced, it'll have to be hydrostatically tested before it can be in transit back to the customer location, because it has to be up to date on that testing.
Okay. Let's move to the hoses.
Okay.
Of the system.
Okay.
The hoses, how often do they need to be hydro tested or replaced? Or
so one of the changes now that they're starting to document in NFPA 2001, as an industry across the board, to meet the criteria of actually doing a hydrostatic testing on any of your discharge or pilot hoses per what NFPA specifies, really nobody can meet the specification. So real quick, you got your hose. You're supposed to have it in some kind of enclosure that you can watch it. Excuse me. You're going to fill that hose up with water. And then depending on the systems, depending on what the pressure needs to be at. So as you're slowly putting pressure to that discharge hose, if all of a sudden it starts to get distorted or it starts to move, it fails.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let's say it passed. Now you got to dry the hose. Then the standard just basically says it's got to be properly marked. Okay, what does properly marked mean? Can I use a Sharpie? Do I have to put some special label on? I mean, it was never clearly defined. In the newer NFPA standards, they are now saying you can hydrostatically test your discharge or pilot hoses or just replace them every 5 years. Course in Fire and Security will just replace them every 5 years. It is something that we have found is a lot more cost effective. It's more convenient because, again, if you have hoses that you really wanted to have hydrostatic tested, then those hoses are going to have to be removed. So
put out of service.
It could be put out of service. Well, if we're already putting hoses in there to hydrostat, well, why not just put the new hoses in and be done with it? And it's something that can really be done, unless the hose just looks really, really bad, which generally they're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that can be done on your next service 6 months. Just have it done then. Your system's got to be down anyway. Yeah. You might as well do a little bit of service while the system is being taken down for the regular maintenance to begin with. So, but generally 5 year hydro, but as an industry, everybody's wanting to replace them every 5 years.
Okay. And as far as the people that work around the system, the staff, the employees, let's say at a server room,
mm-hmm.
the IT people,
right?
Are they required to have training on the system?
The term required, if you're asking me, I'm going to say yes. But one of the big things that are now starting to be pushed, not only in the NFPA standard, but in some jurisdictions that I've actually gotten some phone calls the last couple, 3 years where OSHA has come in and said, hey, let me look at your training records. You don't have anybody trained on your clean agent system. You got 30 days. What? right?
Yep.
Your personnel, it's your system. It's your enclosure. Your personnel really, really needs to have an understanding. Does that mean they have to know every little intricate thing about your system? No. But they need to be have a basic understanding what the agent is, a basic understanding what the yellow lights mean, what the red light means, what the bell ring and dinging, all those things, just the basic functions. And you really ought to have your personnel trained on those functions. And you really ought to have an SOP, a standing operating procedure, in the event something was going to happen with that clean agent system to discharge or be in trouble or whatever. What is your process? How are you going to react to that? Who's going to react to that? It's all about safety. It's all about educating, you know. It's no different from fire drills, mm-hmm. right? You really ought to do a monthly fire drill, you know, to understand what to do and let it be, you know, let it be to the forefront. And unfortunately, a lot of people just kind of take it for advantage and they don't think about it. And then when something happens, they panic and really don't know what to do. But if you got your people at least trained, then, you know, hopefully they're not panicking and everything can be orderly.
Well, I think also it could also help them make sure that the room integrity itself.
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
Make them understand how yes. the system works, that we can't leave this server room door open, propped open.
Correct.
And because if a fire happened and we just ran.
Correct.
The agent system might not work because you yep. left that door open.
And in all my years, that's happened one time. Luckily, it was not a true incipient or fire event, but customer called and said, you know, it was incredible how quick the agent dissipated out of the room. And so, you know, being in the role that I am, the branch is like, hey, is there any way you can come and support us on the yada, yada, yada? So I go and meet with the customer, with the branch personnel, and we're talking about it. And, you know, I kind of looked at the customer. I was like, was your door open? Well, yeah, it gets really hot in here. Well, so then once I went through and kind of explained mm-hmm. what transpired and why, it was kind of a, you know, the oh crap, you know, yeah. light bulb moment. And so we ended up coming in. Customer paid us to come in, and they hired a hardware or a door company to come in and put closures.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came in and put a door holder. So in the event the system were to go into alarm, the door will automatically close, but yeah. they can keep it open to help try to keep it cool, that type of thing. Yeah. So.
Last question. Are there any other required inspections or tests that aren't covered in NFPA 2001 or that we haven't gone over?
Not really. I mean, the process is obviously we're going to meet with the customer
mm-hmm.
and first thing is building alarm, get it bypassed, get the monitoring on test. The first thing we're going to want to do is we're going to want to disarm the cylinders. And then once we get the cylinders disarmed, now we're going to open up the panel. Is there any shutdowns? Is there any shutdowns we have to worry about? Is there power shutdown, HVAC shutdown, door release, damper, those type of things? If we need to bypass them, we'll bypass them. If we can let them go, we're going to let them go. And then we're going to test our first smoke. What happens? Test our second smoke. What happens? Verify time delay. Okay, release device. Reset everything. Test smokes again. Verify the functionality of the abort. How is the abort set up? Mm-hmm. How is it supposed to work? Okay, it's functioning. Whatever. Reset. Do it again. Make sure that manual releases override the abort. Then if they have a maintenance switch, which is basically a switch, if you think of it as a light bulb, you know, you go and flip the light switch down, lights go out. So once you flip that switch, the panel should go into supervisory. Mm-hmm. Basically, all you're doing is breaking the circuit from the panel to the release device with the maintenance switch. You're opening up so power can't continually go to the release device. We got to verify that. We're going to go through that process, depending on how many devices are on the system. And then we're going to document that and provide a sequence of operation, because that proves that we've went through and tested everything to the best of our ability. If there's something that we could not do for whatever reason, we're going to have that documented. And that won't necessarily maybe be a deficiency, but we need to notate it that we weren't able to do it at this time, and here's why. And then we're going to go over the report with the customer. But once we get everything tested, we're going to check the weight and pressure of the agent containers, look at the piping, the fittings, the nozzle orientation, check the batteries, the charger. On average, an inspection on average takes about two and a half hours mm-hmm. to go through and test everything. And again, that really depends on the size of the system.
Yeah.
You know, we've got some systems that takes us 3/4 of a day. It's just, it's a very large system. And that's just the process. But, you know, like I said, it's at the end of the day, it's great that your devices work, but if you don't have as-builts and flow calcs and proper enclosure integrity, you could be end up being very, very highly disappointed if you're ever needing the system on it functioning as you thought it should, and that really falls back on you because you didn't want to, you know, properly maintain it. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, your car's due for an oil change, your oil light comes on, and it's been on, and it's been on, and you just keep, you know, and then all of a sudden you look at the, well, I don't know where my, why my engine seized up. It's, I mean, it's kind of the same. And I mean, yep. you need to make sure this stuff is
regularly maintained.
Yeah. Yep. And the concept that these systems, I don't care if it's sprinkler, fire extinguisher, restaurant, fire alarm, for that matter, your card access, your gate access, your security, your cameras, clean agent, CO2, doesn't matter what your system is. Everybody, because, well, you know, we have dumped a lot of money into this to keep this thing maintained. We've never had to use it. Well, okay. You don't seem to bat an eye if you need to, you know, you're paying your house insurance every month and you haven't ever used it. It's kind of this, mm-hmm. these systems are assets. They're a return on your investments. Your investment is not only your building, your operation, but your people and the possibility of lost production. Some form or fashion, they are all assets to your life safety. And as long as you keep them properly maintained, the event of, you know, something just randomly bad happening, you're really kind of eliminating that because you're getting the system properly maintained. You're staying on, you know, staying on top of it. So, yeah, they need to look at them as assets for sure.
Well, I think you brought up insurance. I think with the clean agent systems, I mean, these are systems that are people, they aren't required. People usually choose
correct.
To have these.
That's correct.
In many ways, they are insurance.
They are insurance.
For your data,
yep.
for whatever, what, you know, a lot of times what you're protecting.
Yep.
Beyond that, you don't want to get it wet due to sprinklers,
right.
you know. So.
Well, and again, you really hit on something, and I think we talked about it on the last podcast, was, you know, these systems are not required. Once you have them, they've got to be properly maintained. But with that being said, everybody always looks, well, we got the clean agent to protect our hardware. Well, the truth of the matter, a lot of times, your hardware is just a drop in the bucket compared to your production or your data loss that you cannot retrieve because all of a sudden you've lost all this hardware. Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of interacts with each other. You know, so at the end of the day, your absolute best protection is, so let's say you had a server room and you wanted a gas system and you have the gas system, your absolute best protection, if it really came to that, would then be a backup pre-action or sprinkler system still in the room. Mm-hmm. Well, you said earlier, wait a minute, Chris, you said earlier that you don't want water in server. That's true. But once you, if you get to the point where the clean agent system could not, for whatever reason, actually suppress the ignition source in the exampled server room, and it gets out of control, your sprinkler is there, you're now to the point you've already got damage. Your contents in that room has already been damaged. You're now to structure protection. That's where the sprinkler systems have proven time and time and time again, they are absolutely fantastic, necessary systems to protect the building.
Yep.
You're to that point. You don't care about the contents anymore. You're just trying to protect the building.
Yep. All right. I think we went a little long, but, you know, it's been interesting and lots of detail on the inspections and stuff. If you want to learn more about clean agent systems or having them inspected and tested, you can contact one of your local Corson branches or go to Corson.com. Chris, thanks for joining me once again.
Absolutely, Aaron. Thank you very much. It was fun.
All right. That'll do it. Bye.
See you guys.
If you like today's episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast and rate us on iTunes. You can also find our podcast on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, and other popular podcast players. Search for Corson Fire and Security Chat to find it. Thanks once again for listening, and I will see you next week for our next episode of the Corson Fire and Security Chat podcast. Have a great day, everybody. Bye. The information in this podcast is for informational purposes only. It is believed to be reliable, but Corson Fire and Security assumes no responsibility or liability for any errors or omissions in the content of this podcast. It does not constitute professional advice. The listener of this podcast is responsible for verifying the information's accuracy from all available sources, including the product manufacturer. The authority having jurisdiction should be contacted for code interpretations.